The views and opinions expressed on America's Workforce Union podcast and its digital media channels are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of the producers or sponsors.
Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
A big day for workers at Volkswagen in Tennessee. Voting starts today. Will they go union and what they have to put up with? Today on the show, the latest from the American Federation of Government Employees and the International Brotherhood of Teamsters on the boycott of Molson Coors. Welcome to the Wednesday, April 17th edition of America's Workforce, where we're available on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with Jessica LaPointe. Now, Jessica is president of the National Council of Social Security Administration's Field Operations, all the locals, which are part of AFGE Council 220. Website is afgec220.org. And I'll tell you, got a sad situation that's playing out in America. Due to chronic staffing and attrition issues, Social Security Administration recently announced they will be closing a field office in Southeast Cleveland, Ohio, a community which is 94% Black. And this is going to continue from what I'm gathering here. All it has to do with is severe underfunding of the Social Security Administration's operating budget, which has cost them to reach their lowest staffing levels in 27 years. In fact, Jessica reports the 1,200 community-based Social Security field offices around the country could be facing a similar fate. She's quoted as saying, most Americans do not have a choice to pay into the Social Security system through their paychecks. Yet for the last decade, Congress has acted like it's been a choice to fund the program's operating costs and staff the agency properly to meet public demand and delivery of timely benefits and services. Due to the high turnover of staff, due to inadequate pay, benefits, and out-of-control workloads, and Congress's failure to fund the agency to replace staffing losses, improve working conditions, and offer a competitive pay and benefits package, it has been death by a thousand cuts. She added that to get where Social Security needs to be in its operating costs to meet public demand, Congress will need to stop operating off a false narrative that Social Security recipients are adding to the national debt and therefore SSA, the administration, Social Security Administration, is forced to compete with other labor and health and human services programs as part of the annual appropriations process. You know, one of the problems with this situation, those that are elected to Congress, whether it's the House or the Senate, they do not pay into Social Security. And many government workers on the state level, same situation. So you've got lawmakers who are not affected by this. And there's many lawmakers that think Social Security should go away. If you can't save enough money for your retirement, that is your problem. Government shouldn't be involved in this. That opinion has existed since 1935 when they started Social Security. Oh, it's a socialist program. We can't do that. This is going to be an interesting conversation with Jessica. And I got to congratulate the American Federation of Government Employees. If you go to their website, boy, I'll tell you, this is a great story. They rank number one as the fastest growing large union in the country. I've been saying this on the show. Last year was incredible for organizing. AFGE grew by 5.5%. Their membership went from 282,438 in 2022 to 298,101 in 2023. Second were the machinists, then the firefighters, and then my union, SAG-AFTRA. Do check it out. They got a chart there, the top 20 unions. Richard Miedema will be our second guest on the show today. We had him on a couple of months ago, and he serves as Secretary Treasurer of Teamsters Local 997. I talked about this briefly last week. They have called for a boycott of Molson Coors. And the reason for it is because the negotiations with the company broke off after the multi-billion dollar beer makers' refusal to agree to real wage increases for Teamsters on a new three-year contract. So the members, they actually went on strike 2 months ago today. It was February 17th. And they're holding the strike line 24-7. This is at the Fort Worth Brewery. And they called for a nationwide boycott of Molson Coors. I'm almost embarrassed to report this. When I talk about the fact that they haven't got a pay raise, Molson Coors offered 5 more cents per hour in their wage proposal to the workers who brew and package their signature beers. 5 cents. For months, the company had not budged from its original degrading offer of 99 cent per hour raises. Since the workers were forced into the picket line, Molson Coors CEO Gavin Hattersley, well, he's been paid more than $5.1 million. And get this, the company brought in $12 billion last year. And they're giving the workers a little over a buck an hour. That's it. That's it. That Texas facility is the only major Teamsters-represented Molson Coors facility. It is the only brewery that services the entire western region of the country with Molson Coors products that include Topo Chico, Simply, Pabst, and Yingling, among other major beverage brands. Just amazing. Just amazing, the greed in America today. So Rich will be joining us later in the show. Now, a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at boydwatterson.com. $17 billion in assets under advisement, serving the needs of Taft-Hartley funds. Workers at the Volkswagen plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee, began casting ballots today in an election to join the United Auto Workers, riding on the momentum of its historic wins against the big three automakers. The UAW has been active in organizing workers in Chattanooga and winning supporters ahead of the election. However, some conservative politicians in Tennessee have been, well, let's say, rather aggressive in voicing their anti-union sentiments. One of them is U.S. Senator Bill Hagerty, who recently urged the workers in Chattanooga to vote no on the union, arguing that a union would harm the plant's competitiveness with auto factories abroad. And then there's State Senator Beau Watson, who has denounced the union efforts, warning that voting against the UAW is protecting Tennessee's values. On the other hand, Republican Congressman Chuck Fleischman, whose district encompasses Chattanooga, has remained agnostic on the issue, stating that he wishes to, quote, let the workers decide. Okay. And he's a Republican, all right? A union victory in Tennessee is poised to make history. If the workers vote to form a union, Volkswagen Chattanooga would represent the first auto plant in the South to unionize through an election since the 1940s. Can you believe that? So the voting started today. It'll continue tomorrow and should wrap up on Friday. So we should get some indication by this weekend. And keep in mind, we tried this before, 10 years ago, 2014, when Volkswagen opened that plant in Chattanooga and wanted the union. Why? Because it works. They did it in Germany. Germany is way more pro-union than the United States. And the same thing happened. You had a number of politicians have said, no, 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 you can't do that. The jobs are going to go to Mexico. And it failed. They tried it again some years later, and it failed again. So we'll see what happens. There's a different UAW, especially in the leadership with Sean Fain. Last week, Teamsters Local 211-205 voted to accept severance payments. This is a really sad story. They accepted severance payments from Pittsburgh Post-Gazette management in exchange for dissolving their union and ending their strike against an employer that has violated federal law with several unions. John Schloss, who we have featured on this show many, many times, he is head of the News Guild, which is affiliated with the CWA. He said, "It is beyond disappointing that the Teamsters would abandon their fellow strikers at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We stood with the Teamsters in the cold, in the rain, in the snow, and in the face of violent scab trucks and aggressive police. We will continue to strike and hold the employer to account, and we will never give up on our union or our members." Mike Davis is the CWA district rep. He's a vice president of 2-13. He said, too, "We are very disappointed. By selling out in secret, the Teamsters have not only damaged their own credibility, but have also jeopardized the possibility of a fair settlement for all the unions involved. We will not forget who stayed in this fight to the end, but right now we're focused on sticking together because we're stronger together." Also, Zach Tanner, who is the president of the News Guild in Pittsburgh, he said, "After 18 months on strike, standing on the picket lines all day and late into the nights with Teamster drivers represented by the local, that's 211-205, it's extremely disappointing to see this unit fall for the company's divide and conquer strategy. Newsroom workers will not be broken, though. We will always stand strong against the company's union-busting tactics, just as we stood strong against the bosses, the cops, and scabs that have tried to break us." That is a situation. It is so ugly there. We've had John and Zach on the show several times, and we're dealing with a vicious company, the Block Brothers, and they are doing everything possible. They don't even print local news. They don't have any reporters that know the city anymore. Hopefully, it'll come to some resolve, and hopefully, the unions will stick together. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to link up with Jessica LaPointe and talk about closing Social Security offices in the United States of America. Scary thought. We'll cover it next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Alliance for American Manufacturing is a nonprofit, nonpartisan partnership formed back in 2007 by some of America's leading manufacturers and the United Steelworkers. Their mission is simple: strengthen American manufacturing and create new private sector jobs through smart public policies. Key word there is smart. We need to be smarter than ever in today's highly competitive world. The Alliance for American Manufacturing believes that an innovative and growing manufacturing base is vital to America's economic and national security, as well as providing good jobs for future generations. Good jobs today, good jobs tomorrow. Good American jobs. Find out more at AmericanManufacturing.org. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Ironworkers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. For more information, please visit bmwe.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at uaw.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. We had a really good conversation. We always have great conversations with Melissa Cropper, who is the president of the OFT. And that show was a podcast yesterday. If you missed it, awfpodcast.com. Check it out, awfpodcast.com. Talking about an organizing win, a big one at Equitas Health. And also, they're voting on one of the libraries, doing a lot of organizing with libraries in Central Ohio. So do check that out. Right now, though, let's go to the state of Wisconsin. And joining us on our live line, each and every month, we check in with the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE.org. Once again, the fastest growing large union in the country. Do check out that story on their website. Today, though, we're going to talk about Social Security and the closing of Social Security offices. One is closing in Southeast Cleveland, a community that's 94% black. And this got picked up by local media yesterday. And Jessica LaPointe is president of the National Council of Social Security Administration Field Operations. That would be Council 220. Jessica, thank you for joining us today. I appreciate you coming to the table. This is not good. This is not good. Before we get into these closings, talk to me about Council 220. You're based in Wisconsin. Is this a national thing for all the Social Security offices? Kind of fill in the blanks for me. Go ahead and welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. AFGE Council 220 is the national council that represents 33 affiliate locals nationwide. These locals represent Social Security workers in field offices like the one in Ohio, like all of them in Ohio and across the nation. We also represent the teleservice center employees in our call centers and our workload support unit employees that handle the Social Security internet applications. So we're about 30,000 total dedicated Social Security workers nationwide servicing the American people.
And very dedicated, I might add. My wife just had the opportunity to go to one of the offices, and she told me, she came home and she said, "My God, I can't believe how helpful they were. They guided me through the whole process." So you did a great job training, no doubt about that, no doubt about that. But sadly, though, these offices are closing for a number of reasons. But how long have you been president of Council 220, and how long have you been altogether with AFGE, Jessica?
Well, I'm first and foremost a civil servant. I have been a Social Security bilingual generalist claim specialist for 15 years now with the Social Security Administration. I have been the council president of the worker union for 2 years now.
Okay, good.
And I've been with AFGE. I became a member 11 years ago.
Okay. Well, congratulations on the organizing. I'll tell you, those of you listening, you got to read this story. The fastest growing large union in the United States, followed by the machinists, the firefighters, my union, which is SAG-AFTRA. But there's a chart there. And we've had David Kahn on the show a number of times, and he's the organizing director. And we talked about last year because they made some changes in the organizing office, and mainly in strategy. And obviously, it's working. It's clearly working. All right, that's the good news. Now, talk to me about what's going on here, because you've got staffing problems. You just can't keep the offices operating. And I'm kind of concerned. There's the one in Cleveland, is it already closed or what?
I have to check back with the agency. I'm actually on the road doing some organizing and some demonstrations in front of field offices in Wisconsin due to this exact topic, the staffing crisis, the attrition crisis, the underfunding crisis that the agency is facing. But the last I heard that they were closing going to appointment only as of April 8th, and then they'll be closing its stores, what they consider to be temporarily, as of May 8th, while they look for solutions, while the commissioner and the deputy commissioner of operations are looking for solutions to servicing the area.
Now, the staffing, and there's a lot of retirements. It's a thing called attrition here. How long has this been going on, Jessica?
Well, we're using the looser definition of attrition that encompasses resignations and encompasses terminations and retirements. And is at a 27-year low in staffing. We reached a 25-year low upon reentry from the pandemic by October of 2022, and we continue to decline. So we are just not able to retain the workforce any longer, and then we're also not able to recruit. We're not a competitive employer, and that's even if we get the funds to hire, which are few and far between over the last decade.
So this is in Congress's hands right now. It seems like they're choosing to ignore what's going on. Is that kind of the problem right now?
Yeah, you kind of nailed it. I mean, they have all but abandoned Social Security's operating responsibilities. From my vantage point, it is not a choice for most Americans to pay into their FICA. To pay into FICA through their paychecks. That is what funds the Social Security Trust Funds. Social Security Trust Funds sit about $3 trillion. Benefits are about $1.3 trillion, paying out benefits to 70 million Americans nationwide. And yet Congress is acting like it's a choice to fund Social Security or allow Social Security to access trust funds to fund its operating costs. Our operational costs are paid for out of the trust funds. We are sitting at about 0.94% of outlays is funded for our operating costs, including staffing and salaries and benefits. And we that has dwindled. It used, 9 years ago, it was at 1.2%, and it has dwindled to 0.94%. And we're calling the Commissioner of Social Security, Martin O'Malley, and AFGE, the worker union, is calling on Congress to restore the 1.2% so that, you know, we can hire, we can maintain solid hiring, and we can reduce these long service delays that the American people are experiencing, and also this new phenomenon of having to close field offices and communities because we can't get staff to man the offices any longer.
So the money comes out of what is in Social Security, the trust fund, and you mentioned it was 1.2% for the salaries for the people that work in those offices, and that went down to 0.94%. When did that happen? When did it drop to 0.94%?
So let me correct you. It's not just the salaries. All of our operational budget is sitting at 0.94% of outlays.
Okay. Okay.
9 years ago, it was at 1.2%. That is what we traditionally operate off of. So let me give you an idea. Allstate, Liberty Mutual, they operate at about 20% of outlays. So even at 1.2%, that's a steal for the American people. But
yeah.
Congress keeps cutting us. We've been slashed by 20% over the last decade. All the while, baby boomers are continuing to retire at a rate of 12,000 a week. We have our highest beneficiary rate in history, and we have our lowest staffing levels in 25 years. So, you know, it's death by a thousand cuts at Social Security. There's a lot of issues resulting in attrition. And we can talk about those if you want to get into that.
Oh, yeah. I want to get in all that. And I said this at the top of the show. There's a lot of people in Congress that do not like Social Security. And sadly, they don't even contribute into it. You know, they have their own pension fund, many in state and federal government. So that's another story. But my question to you, the one mm-hmm. that's closing in northeastern Ohio, it's in a community that is 94% black. That just doesn't sound right. I'm just wondering here, who picks and chooses these here? I mean, is it because it's in that community and you're talking about people that are going to be underserved here? That's very troublesome. Do you have an answer to that?
It is very troublesome. I can't answer to that. All I can say is there is a trend. And for example, in Wisconsin, in the Mitchell Street neighborhood, that's a 70% Latino neighborhood. It's a predominantly immigrant neighborhood. That field office closed in 2018. We fought really hard to keep that field office in the community. San Juan, Puerto Rico doesn't have a field office in the nation's capital of Puerto Rico. It closed last year and hasn't come back. And now the Southeast Cleveland office. So, as the worker union, I'm here to talk about the workers and what they need to be supported and to stay within their jobs. I'm going to let the advocacy groups dive into the underserving of communities of color. But it is a big concern, and it's one that Social Security needs to address, because we are here to serve the American people.
Right.
And we are here to serve our nation's most vulnerable citizens. That's what Social Security is. That is our mission, to pay the right check to the right person at the right time, and to make sure that is distributed across the board. Social Security is a great equalizer in terms of stabilizing the economy of families and communities. Social Security improves or reduces, rather, incarceration rates in communities. It lifts a million children out of poverty. It improves bankruptcy rates within communities and so forth. It clothes children, puts food on the table, prevents homelessness. It is the nation's greatest anti-poverty program in history. It is the most popular anti-poverty program. And it's in crisis, and we need to fix it. It's the people's program, paid for the people, by the people. And the people need to stand up and fight for it and save it if they're going to want it to be there for them.
You said it best. Jessica LaPointe joining us on our live line today. She's the president of the National Council of Social Security Administration Field Operations Locals. 30,000 strong, that's AFG Council 220, the website AFGEC220.org. More to come from Jessica, because there's a campaign going on through almost the third week of May to make sure that this problem gets the attention that it deserves. Later in the show, we're going to check in with the Teamsters, and that would be local 997 out of Fort Worth, Texas. Richard Miedema is the secretary treasurer there, and they are in the middle of, first of all, number one, they're on strike. They've been on strike for 2 months as of today. And they want you to stop buying Molson Coors. He'll tell you why later in the show. You're listening to America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA. .org.
Attention members of the Heat and Frost Insulators Union who are interested in traveling. Central Ohio has more construction projects on the books than anywhere in the U.S. Mega projects, large and medium-sized jobs are creating more work than our local 50 brothers and sisters can handle. Projects like Intel, the Honda LG battery plant, and multiple data centers for Facebook, Google, and Amazon offer union wages, overtime, and exciting incentives. Local 50 is seeking union travelers to meet the needs of its signatory contractors who can put you to work immediately. If you're a member in good standing and interested in the work opportunities in Central Ohio, visit insulators50.com/AWF travel. For more information. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield, labor's trusted health partner, bringing people, communities, and care together to transform the future of health. For more information, please visit anthem.com/labor and trust. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
Hey, this is Sean McGarvey, and I'm president of North America's Building Trades Unions, and I'm a proud listener of America's Workforce. I love this podcast.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. When you get an opportunity, here's what you do. Just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. Let's go back to Wisconsin. Joining us on our live line today is Jessica LaPointe. Jessica is president of the National Council of Social Security Administration Field Operations Locals. 30,000 strong, that would be AFGE Council 220. Website again, AFGEC220.org. And the story is the closing of Social Security offices, mainly due to chronic staffing and attrition issues. A lot of people retiring, a ridiculous amount of retirees. They just can't handle it. And sadly, they're not getting the money to keep these offices going. And, okay, so talk to me about, I see in the press release, this is all posted on AFGE.org. You started this at the end of March, and you've partnered with the Wisconsin Alliance for Retired Americans. And we do segments on the show. In fact, we're going to hear from the Alliance this Friday on the show. Talk to me about this partnership, because we got to get loud on this one. We got to get very vocal on this situation, because we can't see right now a field office in northeastern Ohio, a community that's 94% black, is either on the verge of closing. It's already closed, but that's a sad situation. We covered that already. But talk to me about what we're planning to do to stop this madness in the United States of America, Jessica. It's all yours. Go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, the good news is we do have a plan to save Social Security, and we've implemented it in Wisconsin. I was contacted by Alex Brower, the executive director of the Wisconsin Alliance for Retired Americans, and his president, Ross Winkelbauer, and they asked if I would join them on a 13-city tour of Wisconsin field offices, Social Security field offices, and do demonstrations in front of them, sort of collecting retirees and different unionists as we go. We've had 8 different unions show up so far in support of, in a social union effort to support Social Security. Social Security affects most of us. We pay into it our entire working lives, and we expect it to be there for us, and it's at great risk of not being there. So we partnered up. The Wisconsin Alliance, and during the demonstration, talks about the solvency, the looming solvency issues in 10 years' time. Only 77% of benefits are expected to be paid out to current beneficiaries. So we talked about solutions in what we call lifting the cap, the earnings contribution cap. Millionaires stop paying into Social Security as of March 1st. And billionaires stop paying in within a few minutes of each year, while the average middle class working American pays in the entire year with an earnings limit cap set at $168,000 for this year. So there's legislation right now circulating in the House and Senate. There's the 2100 Act, that's Congressman Larson's bill, that would deal with expanding benefits, lifting that earnings cap, and getting Social Security solvent and thriving again. The Social Security Expansion Act in the Senate, sponsored by Senator Warren and Sanders, would also do something very similar. So we're talking about supporting that legislation, not supporting the fiscal commission. Right now, there's a fiscal commission bill in the House that is in markup that talks about raising, or potentially it could raise the retirement age instead of addressing lifting the cap for solvency. So we think it's entirely unfair that somebody would have to work into their 70s or even 80s before they could start to collect their earned Social Security benefits and stabilize and enjoy their retirement. So we're talking about that, and then we're talking about the access problem to Social Security, and that's a current crisis that we have that's been brewing for the last decade as baby boomers are retiring at a rate of 12,000 a week while our budgets, our operating budgets, are being slashed by 20%. So seniors and the disabled are having to wait far too long for benefits. Some people aren't able to get an appointment when they call. Others are having to wait over 8 months to get an initial disability decision and 2.5 years through the hearing. We're seeing studies right now that are showing that 30,000 Americans are dying while waiting for a decision on their Social Security benefits. That's per year. So we're here to sound the alarm on that. We're traveling Wisconsin to do it. And then I just got contacted by the California Alliance for Retired Americans. They want to do something similar there. We're calling on lawmakers to hold town halls within their districts to answer to their constituency on their voting record on Social Security, because it's not every lawmaker in Congress. I'll let you guess which one. But it's not every lawmaker that are making decisions in behind closed doors, in the shadows, on the people's earned Social Security benefits. So we want to call attention to that, hold lawmakers accountable for how they're voting on Social Security. A majority of the House voted to slash Social Security's operating funding by 30% during these last shutdown debt ceiling talks, and that would cause a complete collapse of the program. And even though we got $100 million in increased funding this last, finally, just a few months ago, after operating on the continuing resolution of flat funding for most of the fiscal year, we're still not able to retain staff and keep staff to service the communities and in field offices. And the reason for that, if you want me to go into that now or take another question.
Hey, you're on a roll. Keep going, girl.
So the reason why we aren't able to retain staff, first of all, it takes 3 years to train and to have an employee become proficient, because our programs are complex and cumbersome. So we're not getting the money to replace staff as the workforce ages out, as the workforce burns out because of their overwork, their workloads are unmanageable. The pay and benefits are not competitive. We are at a 27% pay gap nationwide with the private sector and like work in the private sector. In other places without locality pay, like Madison, Wisconsin, there's a pay gap of 50% for Social Security workers. So we just aren't getting paid enough to deal with the issues, the working conditions that we're being subjected to in these field offices, having to work through breaks and lunches to keep up with case demand, to keep up with public demand, being asked to come in early and take appointments, being asked to stay past your tour to take appointments, almost mandating overtime to deal with the influx of applicants, being double booked, triple booked in at one time in appointments. And it's just getting worse, and to the point where, yes, they cannot staff the Southeast Cleveland field office, and so they're looking at ways to do that. And we're trying to figure out creative ways. Where the commissioner is very open to hearing solutions from labor. He works very closely with labor, and anybody that has a good idea, he will listen to. He just got appointed and confirmed. So he's sort of jumping in and getting, rolling up his sleeves and figuring things out. You know, we're thinking about ideas like, or not we, I'm suggesting ideas like recruitment and retention pay, mainly retention pay at this point, to try and get workers to want to stay, or maybe want to commute into Southeast Cleveland to work in the office. Give them an incentive to do the work with the pay disparities that are going on. So it's burnout. It's a mental health crisis. 90% of our workforce knows somebody who is on medication to deal with work-related stress. 8.5% are seeking therapy and mental health treatment. 8% say they know someone that has committed suicide linked to work-related stress at SSA. And it's sad because it's a completely preventable problem. Mm-hmm. Congress knew this was coming. They knew the baby boomers were coming, the silver tsunami. But they decided to not step up and loosen the purse strings of the trust funds to allow retirees and the disabled have timely access to benefits and services. And it's at their own peril. I saw 20% of congressional inquiries are related to the service delays at Social Security. While 78% of Americans believe that Social Security is underfunded and deserves more funding of its operating costs to meet public demand. Like I said, it's the most popular program. So why is this happening in the dark, behind closed doors? Let's bring it out to the sunshine. Let's demand that lawmakers are held accountable for their position on Social Security, for strengthening it, for allowing access to the programs. And if they still refuse, well, then we need to get out and vote. We need to get out and vote like hell for people, for lawmakers who are going to play ball.
Yeah, yeah. Elections matter. Say it on the show all the time. Jessica, you hang in there. You got a friend here on America's Workforce, and we're going to stay on this story. Believe me, we are definitely going to stay. We cannot let any more offices close because Congress has their head in the sand. Jessica LaPointe, President of the National Council of Social Security Administration Field Operations. That would be AFGE Council 220. You stay safe and stay strong and stay in touch, okay, Jessica?
That sounds good. You do the same. Thanks for having me.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Richard Miedema is with Teamsters Local 997. He's coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
This portion of the show brought to you by the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers. For more information, please visit bacweb.org. The Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council, consisting of 8 iron worker local unions in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan. We build the skylines and bridges along the Great Lakes. With more work than ever before, the Great Lakes District Council is actively searching out the next great iron worker. Whether it's building the next Intel plant or constructing a bridge to safely connect our great cities along the lake. So join the Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council today. Find out how and learn more about the council by visiting iwdistrictcouncil.com. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org. America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce.
Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. Welcome back to the show. We had this gentleman on back in February. His name is Rick Miedema, and he is the secretary-treasurer of Teamsters Local 997, and they are on strike against Molson Coors. And I remember it wasn't going too well when you and I talked, Rick, and I tell you, it doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And now I know your local is called for a boycott, a national boycott of Molson Coors. Okay, let's talk about where you are. I know you've been trying to get a multi-year contract. What's the latest, Rick? Go ahead, my brother.
So, how you doing, Flash? Good afternoon. So, we had a meeting with the company roughly about 2 weeks ago, and they came in and met with us for 2 days, about 18 hours of bargaining over 2 days. And at the end of the bargaining, they increased their original 99-cent offer to the employees by a nickel. So, after 6 weeks of striking, they found an extra nickel to give everybody, so that brought $1.04 increase. At that time, you know, I think that pretty much was the nail in the coffin for the international in D.C., and they rolled out the national boycott of all Molson Coors products, which the list is pretty lengthy. You know, Molson Coors has pretty much pushed the Miller name out of everything. So everything that Miller Brewing Company made back in the day is now under the Molson Coors umbrella. So the list is pretty lengthy of items to boycott.
So what were you pushing for? I mean, 99 cents to $1.04, that's pretty much where they ended the discussion. What were you pushing for, Rick?
We were looking, so, you know, just to rehash a little bit, Anheuser-Busch got a settlement, you know, roughly about 23% across their five-year agreement. Mm-hmm. And Molson wants to advertise that they pay industry standard wages. So, you know, the AB deal was done while we were striking. And in our opinion, that raised the industry standards. And like I said, they would want to advertise that they pay a fair wage for the brewing market. But yet they don't want to put their money where their mouth is. It's okay for them to say it, but when it comes down to actual dollars and cents, they don't want to do it. They refuse to do it.
So do we have anything on schedule here to meet again? And another thing, how's the boycott working so far?
We're getting a lot of traction from it. You know, and honestly, I've got my members, the days that they aren't striking, they're going around to local bars, restaurants, grocery stores, convenience stores, what have you. And they're getting images, pictures, talking to bartenders, talking to distributors. And the market around here in the DFW market is actually getting low. We have a lot of issues with keg beer. Every brewery doesn't have a keg line, so they're not able to keep up with the keg demand right now for bars and restaurants. There's been several restaurants and bars around here in Fort Worth that have been out for weeks, and they say it's not even available you know, to order through the distributor right now. So we feel as we're getting to them. We didn't think it was going to take 8 weeks to get to them. Thought it would be a little bit faster than that. But it is what it is. We're out here. We're pounding the pavement. The IBT's got our back 1,000%. They're keeping us up with our strike money. And until we get something that we can actually take back to a vote, the brewery director was adamant that he was not going to let us take back the nickel offered for a vote, because that was just a complete insult slap in the face.
Oh,
the company,
yeah.
At this point.
Well, I saw the comment from Sean O'Brien, your general president. I mean, he put it bluntly. It's a total disgrace. It's not even serious.
Yeah.
Come on.
No, it's not even a serious offer at all.
And Rick, here's the crazy part of it. This company's making money. I mean, I'm looking at some of the numbers
huge
here.
Huge money.
$12 billion last year, is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely 100% right. They touted how they've made six years of profit growth. I think I might have talked about it less than I was on. 6 years of profit growth in 1 year alone, and that was 2023. A lot of that was related to the Anheuser-Busch advertising that they got some bad publicity for. But the sole beneficiary to that was Molson Coors. Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at their CEO here. He's been paid more than $5.1 million. $5.1 million. Just crazy, crazy.
Yes, so Flash, when it's all said and done with his stock options and bonuses and all that, he's tipping at $10 million. So
oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. His salary is $5 million. But with his stock options and bonuses and everything else, he's tipping close to $10 million a year.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you brought that up because I remember during the pandemic, I think this was in the airline industry. There were some CEOs saying they're going to take like a dollar a year or something, you know, to show some sacrifice. But on the other side of that, they had $20 million in stock options. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Looks good on paper, huh? Looks good on paper.
There's always more to the story, especially when it's coming from a CEO. So, yep. Solidarity, let's talk about that. And how many members are we talking about on strike since February now?
Roughly 420.
420? How are they holding up there, Rick?
We're good. I mean, you know, we're holding together. We're banding together. This has brought our local closer together. Being out in the strike line, you meet people that, you know, with a plant and a membership that size in one facility. You know, you work the day shift, you don't know somebody on midnight, vice versa. So it's made a lot of new friendships. A lot of people have gotten to know each other. They're hanging out on their days off. They have family that they didn't even know, you know, may know each other, whatever else, friends and acquaintances. So it's actually been, from that aspect, it's been a blessing to us because it's brought a lot of people closer together. A lot of people closer together.
I'm reading, too, that your facility, that's Dallas-Fort Worth, is the only major Teamster-represented Molson Coors facility, the only brewery that services the entire western region of the United States. So, you know, you talked about the impact here. I mean, it's going to be felt here. And I'm just hoping, too, that some of the – I know they're a big player with March Madness. I'm just hoping that some of the people that you know, obviously – showcase their products, in this case Molson Coors on TV networks, will shy away from them, and that's going to make a difference as well when it comes to sales. So we'll see what happens here. One more question here before you go. I know you're busy. I know you're trying to keep the peace together with all the brothers and sisters over there. Is there anything that maybe our listeners can do? I mean, we got a boycott going on, okay? That's number one. But I'm just wondering, we want to help you out. We want to get this over the finish line. What would your advice be to the listeners here on America's Workforce, Rick?
Continue with the boycott. You know, promote the message on Facebook, whatever kind of social media platform you have, and help push that as much as possible. Help push the struggle of what we're up against. You know, like we just talked about, the top five executives is on the Teamster page. We posted it yesterday. But like the top five executives for the entire organization, their payroll was exceeding of what us 420 people in Texas make. I mean, it's a shame of what this company has come to. I've been employed there for 20 years. I got 20 years of seniority, and what it's come down to is just it's almost an embarrassment at this point. We have a lot of support. There are a lot of, I'll be honest with you, there are some organizing activities going on in Golden right now, which is a large facility. And you know, everybody, all the sister facilities are just tired. The Teamsters were the only ones that stepped up and have our back to support the strike, able to keep us afloat with our strike benefit. And hopefully this all, our fight here in Fort Worth is a fight for the rest of our other breweries to get what we all deserve being employees of this organization. But, you know, to your listeners, help us push the boycott as much as possible. Don't drink any of it. Keep it on the shelves, you know, and spread that message as much as you can.
I got to read a comment here from Sean O'Brien. I'll tell you, Sean's a fighter. I mean, he's got some great contracts here in the last year and a half, especially with the UPS. You mentioned Anheuser-Busch. This is what Sean said. Let me be clear. The Teamsters aren't going anywhere. We will fight as hard and for long as it takes to protect our members and get the wages they deserve. It shouldn't be difficult for Molson Coors to agree to a respectable contract unless their goal is to deprive workers of fair wages and strip them of good benefits and job protections. Sean O'Brien, General President of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. We'll leave it on that note. Rick, I just want to say stay in touch with us. Stay safe, okay, my brother?
All right, Flash. You have a good day. I appreciate it.
And that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, how states are handling heat exhaustion. Some good, some bad. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Until then, All of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.